Just one game this week, the 3-2 win over Doncaster Rovers. Eddie O'Grady thinks it was a wonderful result after a slow start to the second half. John Dickinson didn't think it was the best performance, but heavens to Betsy, that could be important with other teams dropping points around us. Ben Benson thinks it's always good to get those results when out of sorts. Great to see them never give up. Trevor Griffiths says, not our best, and we still won. Tim Robinson was impressed by Doncaster. He was worried by our bench options, but they kept going and found a way. This team's will to win is strong. Graham Miles agrees. Other seasons we'd have lost that, but this team has such a will to win and just kept going in a scrappy game. Ian Perry thinks Lee and Ryan are behind this and deserve huge credit. Even when we go behind, you wouldn't bet against us getting a result. James says good teams find a way to win and this side is bloody good. To win in the manner we did is very sweet, with every player giving 100%. Alex Smith says he finds it hard to doubt this team. A bit sluggish, but good teams can win ugly when they need to. Rob Murray saw a game of two halves. Crewe deservedly ahead at half time. Second half, second best team, and turned it over too easily. But he walked away a happy man with the 3 points. Jonathan Ditt agrees with this assessment. Donny played well second half, but we plugged away and O'Riordan popped up again. James thought we'd have been lucky to get a point, never mind three. But if you want to go up, you need those results. Chris saw a team that could have scored more with the chances we had, but a true testament to this team to dig out the winner. Sean Rogers didn't think we looked after the ball very well and were carrying a couple of players, but the never say die attitude is just what we needed. Pete thought we sat too deep and made it harder than it should have been, especially second half, but they came back fighting. Andy O'Neill agrees with this. We sit too deep in the second half of games and invite pressure to come onto us, which is a concern. Alex thought we should have been 4-1 up at the break before sitting back and not having a shot between the 46th and 75th minute. Played some beautiful football before the winner though. Liam thinks Tracy would be at Real Madrid now if he had end product, but adds that Doncaster are about 10 points shy of where he sees them. Craig Fisher agrees with that. They were a good press inside and we struggled to beat that press with too many slack passes. Chris Thompson thinks he's in love with Conor O'Riordan. What a player. Henry Lewis writes, wow, the patience to build up and free Rio out wide was genius. And what a ball from our most improved player. And Gary Pearson says, Rio's wonderful left wand, magic's a winner. Hello and welcome back to the latest episode of the Railway Men podcast. We have the dramatic league win over Doncaster to talk about today, plus the now renamed Pizza Cup whatever win over Newcastle's kids. We'll briefly have a little chat about that. To do that, I need my panel. They are today Neil Price. Hello, Neil.
Hello. How you doing?
Good. Cheers, brother. Richard Judson. Hello, Richard.
Hello, Stu. Thanks for asking me again.
Not a problem. And Tom Mayle. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Stu. Hello, everybody.
So I'm going to start with Newcastle Tuesday night. Tom, you and I are probably going to stay a bit quiet for this bit because Neil and Richard watched it and we didn't. I think I've said a number of times that I can watch these games. I just choose not to, especially this one with it being the Premier League under-21s. And that's my big problem with this competition. But I was a bit tested on Tuesday because of the lineup that Lee Bell put out. Neil, there was quite a few youngsters in that game. Who stood out to you?
Probably the main one for me would be Nathan Robinson, centre half. He was very good on the ball and very assured, very much a ball playing centre half. He did make a few mistakes, to be fair to him, but I think realistically, we probably want him to make mistakes against Newcastle under-21s and when he's in our first team in League 2 or hopefully League 1 in the future. Other than that, obviously, Lewis Billington was good again. The two young lads that came on at full-back, Sant and Dancy, both looked good, especially when you... I was looking before and Stan Dancy is only a first-year pro as well. So obviously, he's a year younger than Robinson and Lucas Sant. So to get into the team is sort of impressive on his behalf, I would say.
Richard, obviously the result doesn't matter. It's a competition we're already out of. It's a game that really we could have done without playing with the players we've got out at the moment. But it's always nice to win, and it would have done these young players a world of good getting that win, playing for the first team, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a much maligned competition, and quite rightly so, to be honest. And like most fans don't particularly agree with it, but the Alex utilise it to their own benefit, and they most certainly did the other night, you know, with, as I say, the second half. I mean, the first team is the obviously picked first half, where just needed the minutes, and obviously you have to play so many, don't you? But the interesting thing, one, as Neil said at half time, the five he brought on are all practically the youth team. You've got like Billington and Zach Kempster down and Booth with the senior ones and the young lads that came on. And I'd echo what Neil said, the lad Robinson at the back, he was fantastic. I mean, he's obviously highly rated because he's been on the bench once or twice, but he was, as I say, he did, again, like Neil said, he takes chances, but he's just so comfortable on the ball. I mean, there is a big difference, obviously, playing against some young lads from Newcastle and not having somebody like Ollie Palmer marauding towards you, isn't there? But he looked outstanding. And somebody said to me the other day, he's only like a first-year scholar or something, so he's even younger still, and, you know. But he was good. And again, what Neil said, Lucas Sant, when he came on, he looked pretty decent down the left. And fair play to Connor Evans as well up front, because, you know, I don't think he had a good time at Chester, did he? I mean, he got a bit of flack off Chester fans on social media, and obviously never played, and he was brought back. And he never stopped running all game. You know, he had cramp at the end, and he brought all the subs on, and he still had to play. So, you know, hats off to him. I know he's just gone on alone to Marine now, hasn't he? But no, I think, as I say, the Alex utilise that to the benefit, and it can only do them good. Plus, as well, we got 10 grand. So, yeah, that's what you get for doing it, isn't it? And then I'm sure Charles Graham's rubbing his hands at that.
Yeah, and then, Neil, if we just go on to the goals then, Rhys Allport, he did his best Nicky Maynard impression, came on at half-time, and seconds later, with his first touch as a professional in the first team, scored a goal.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably not going to find an easy goal to score in his professional career. But yeah, good first touch, got it under his feet, and then just sort of side-forward it in into an open net, really, after the keeper sort of messed up. And Connor Evans did actually chase the goalkeeper down and put him under that pressure. But yeah, nice easy goal for him to slot away for him.
And I think his interview after the game was really good, wasn't it? When you saw it the day after that Rhys Allport, he sounds like a really sort of fairly articulate lad, actually quite grounded. But one of the things that stood out for me, he says, you know, it was just obviously making his pro debut and scoring, but doing it with the lads. And he said, I've been with some of these since the age of six. It's ridiculous, isn't it? You think it's no wonder they know each other's game inside out. He's been playing with some of them for probably 10 or 11 years.
But I think that's why, you know, I'm generalising. It's why the first team tends to have its best success when there is that crop of youth players coming through together. You know, the last promotion, this season's going really well. And again, we can point at the youth players. It's an easy conclusion to come to, but I think there's a bit of truth in it, the fact that they just know each other's game.
Yeah, I think it's what the other thing he said was, he said it's so good because we train with the first team, and like sometimes you would imagine these young lads going into a first team dressing room and there might be some players there that they've got egos and this looking down the noses at the young kids, but there's none of that at the Alex. It's like you've just got this harmony from, you know, the young lads, right? Because obviously some of the senior pros he brought in are good pros, aren't they? But that's the other thing at the Alex at the moment. You know, everybody is in it all together.
Yeah, just before we move on to the Doncaster game, there's a couple of things I just want to say just before we finish. The first, the fact that we've got a youth player called Stan, that made my day to find that out. That is brilliant. I thought Stan was one of those names we were never going to hear again. So all in favour of that. The other one, it was actually Tim Robinson, that gave me the stat about the amount of academy players we've had in the first team. I put a tweet out the day after the game and said 21. I think the club put out 20. If I'm honest, I've not sort of sat down and looked at their picture to work out who we included, who they haven't. But Tom, I know you didn't watch the game, but I can bring you in there because that's just a fantastic achievement for any club. You know, it's no surprise if it's going to be a club that it's Crew, but any club to have had 21. And it's not a result of an injury crisis and the team's in bottom place in the league or anything. You know, we're flying high and we're still doing this. It deserves commending, doesn't it?
Certainly does. And I think I understood that there was a strategy to try and improve the frequency of youth players coming through on the conveyor belt to feed through. So we tried to kind of break that cycle that we did have of one crop moving on and another not immediately ready to follow up. And we're seeing the evidence of that now. We're dropping, you know, new professionals into the first team, and you know, Billington being a good example, they're coming in and finding their feet pretty much straight away.
Right, let's move on to Doncaster then on Saturday. Richard, having spoken to Daniel, the Doncaster fan, last week, I was a little bit worried that we'd be up against a team who, on paper, looked like it should be an easy home win, but the reality would be a harder test. And I'd say that's what we got, really.
Yeah, I'm the same as you, Stu. I was listening to the podcast last week, listening to that guy. It seems like, obviously, he started poorly, but then when he reeled off all the teams he played, Stockport, Notts County and Mansfield, it was all like the top teams. And I know recently they'd start. And they brought a lot of new players in the summer, didn't they, Grant McCann? He practically built a new team. So I thought they might be a little bit like Stockport were last year, start slowly. And they were finding the feet. And yeah, I thought it could have been a potential bananas. It very nearly was, wasn't it? Let's be honest. I know we'll talk about the game, but the Alex were lucky to win, weren't they? But we'll probably talk about that in a minute. But yeah, it was on paper, it probably looked easier than it was. But yeah, they started well, didn't they, Doncaster, as well, to be fair. I mean, we couldn't live with the big lad on loan. Mo Farl, I think his name is, he's on loan from West Brom. He was like Peter Crouch-like mode, wasn't he? He had legs that went on for everywhere and he couldn't get the ball off him. And then, obviously, ultimately, he scored the first goal.
Neil, I'm going to come to you because you mentioned that he impressed you, Farl, yesterday. I'm just going to disagree with you slightly there, Richard. I thought we started the first 5 minutes very, very well. I don't think the ball went into our half for the first 5 minutes, but we didn't really do anything with it. And then that allowed them to get into the game. And then, you know, they did score that first goal. Neil, what did you make of that goal?
I mean, to have had the ball, the striker came short and it dragged Mickey Dimitriou out of position. And then it fell to Fell, who sort of, yeah, had a shot and obviously went sort of far post and stuff. Like, it was hard and low, but Davis has sort of got his hand to it. It wasn't a million miles away from his hand, was it? He could have potentially saved that and tipped it around for a corner. Yeah, I'm sort of not 100% going to blame him for it and stuff, but you would like to think that he could have, yeah, potentially saved it.
Tom?
Yeah, and the ball came across the outside of our box. Molyneux sold Conor O'Riordan a good dummy, sort of looked like he was going to kind of run into the box and receive the ball. So Conor went for him. Mickey came charging out to meet Ironside, who received the ball in the centre of the box and left Farl completely unmarked on the right-hand side. Adebisi was, well, I couldn't quite remember where he was and nowhere really to be seen on the highlights. From the main stand, it looked like Farl had sort of drilled it into the far post, but when you saw it back on the telly, it actually went to Harvey Davis's near side. And I felt the same. He could have done more. I can understand why he didn't save it, but it sort of felt like it was a bit soft to me. But it was a really good move, I thought. You could kind of see it coming at the time. And I don't think that was majorly calamitous defending by Crew standards, to be honest. But what was good was that we acted positively straight away. And you know, we were back on the tack right from the word go, which again exemplifies the resilience of this side.
I can tell you where Rio was. He'd made a run and he was sort of in midfield and he was the one who lost the ball in the midfield and he hadn't made it back in time. And I don't like to dig players out, especially when we've won. You know, we can be positive today, but I think one of the things I'd like to see more from Aaron Rowe is that covering of Rio, because I just don't think there was enough of it yesterday. I think they were exposed a couple of times, and that was one that cost us. And again, you know, I'm sure there's people who are going to be screaming at us to fully throw the book at Harvey Davis. It was at his near post. He probably should have saved it. But I mean, Richard, you're welcome to put your opinion in here. I think he is getting better. I don't think he is going to be the same as the two we had last season, but I think he is getting better with the more game time he plays.
Yeah, I mean, this is the problem, isn't it? He's got big boots to fill, hasn't he, with the two low knees last year. We come to expect that. You know, Arthur was great and Bede was even better. So the tough acts to follow, aren't they? And he has been much maligned. I mean, but he has, you know, he has lost his games, hasn't he? I mean, the Wrexham one still rankles with me. I bore my mate silly with this because I can still see it now, that cross that he should have come. Anyway, but he has improved a lot of late. And again, he will do. And the trouble is, when you're in goal, you make, well, or like centre-half or something, you make one mistake and it can cost you, can't it? Centre-forwards miss chances, don't they? And you think, oh, well, but it doesn't cost you the game. A goalkeeper can make a mistake and it can cost you the game. Well, that did the goal yesterday. Yeah, I think he expected him to drill it across him. And when he put it on the near post, I think it kind of caught him unawares. But I wouldn't have really pulled him up for that, to be honest, because he had that much time, didn't he? He got the space. As Tom said, Mickey got drawn out, left the space, and say Rio was halfway up the pitch. And yeah, it was. He had quite a bit of time to pick his spot, didn't he, really?
Let's move on to a happier conversation point then, Tom. Cruz equaliser. It came, what would it have been?
9 minutes later, like, on my notes. So
12, 13 yeah. minutes later, yeah, 29 yeah. minutes. Firstly, you've got to ask, what's Luke Offord doing? Wandering all the way up there, so he's the free man running in behind the defence. I don't understand quite, yeah. it, but I do like it.
And it wasn't the first time we saw that yesterday as well, as we'll come on to later. But yeah, I mean, it was a great move. Cooney brought the ball up the touchline, passed it infield to Rowe, who made a one-touch pass to push it around the corner. Offered had continued his fantastic run and finished like a striker, didn't he? It was a great finish. Kind of went through the keeper. Again, it sort of felt like the keeper might have saved it, but he hit it with some force, to be fair to him. And when it fell to him, I think he wasn't the player you would really have A, expected, or B, wanted it to fall to, and wouldn't have been massively surprised if he'd skied it over the railway end. But yeah, it was a terrific finish. I thought it was quite, even the keeper had a mullet as well. That's not something I've seen before, goalkeepers with mullets.
You've not watched enough A-League, Tom. They're all over there. Richard, I've seen Luke Offord do this a number of times this year. It seems to be something they're working on with him, Lee Bell, Ryan Kenny, and all of the rest, to allow him sort of that role to push into midfield and become the spare man. Like, you know, sort of almost, I don't know if this is going too far, like a Jorginho for Chelsea the last few years, get the ball, pass the ball. It's only to his benefit, isn't it, that this is happening?
Well, that's it. It works for John Stones and now Trent Alexander-Arnold at Liverpool. Luke Offord's following in good footsteps, isn't he? No, I mean, like Tom said, he'd had a chance a bit before Offord and he just kind of back-passed it to the goalkeeper. And then when the chance fell to him again, I said, oh, I could see who it was. I said, oh, no, it's Offord. And then he soon shut me up and slammed it through the keeper's legs. It was a great finish. But yeah, there was times in the second half, because it got a bit of a tactical battle as the game progressed as well. I think they must have changed the formation, because it illustrated to me who's behind a lot of the thingies, because Ryan Dicker was stood on the halfway line, you know, putting instructions. It's like when he brought, he took Aaron Rowe off, didn't he? Put Nevitt on as a front two, and then later on, they put him out wide. So I think there was a bit of a tactical battle going on. But they have done it a few times with Offord. A lot of people have been calling for it for a while now, haven't they, to put Offord in midfield. And I think but now they're realising he can actually do the job. But he was certainly there yesterday, and he finished it really well.
Now, technically, there was three goals for Crewe yesterday and three defender goals, and all three of them were from open play. Neil, I don't think we can kind of count the second one, though, because it comes from a long throw and it's sort of like that second phase. But again, superb finish from Conor O'Riordan.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much almost, I mean, it's more of an acute angle than the Offord one, but sort of very similar, sort of fell to him, I say, really by the sort of byline, really, and just sort of absolutely just drilled it home through the keeper. And yeah, no, it's yeah, stick the two centre halves up front.
Tom, I made the point last week before, I can't remember, that I said, you know, we've been so focused on how good Mickey's playing and how good Offord's had this season. We've sort of possibly just ignored Conor O'Riordan a little bit, but the form he's shown at the moment at both ends of the pitch really show that he's possibly going to be the next big move, championship, or maybe even, dare we suggest, above championship.
Yeah, I mean, you wonder if he's benefited from the influence of Mickey, as he, you know, as he's massively improved his game at both ends of the pitch in a short space of time. And I understand from Lee Bell's interview after the match that Connor does score a lot of goals in training, so he's got that in his locker. Yeah, I mean, it's a concern that we might get a big bid for him in January that we might find difficult to turn down. It would be interesting to see what the market thinks he's worth, really. But you know, I've a feeling he might be the next sale out the door and may not be with us for all that long, unfortunately.
One of the words I hear, I think it's Tim is probably the one who uses it the most, is ceiling. Richard, what do you think Conor O'Riordan's ceiling is? And is his ceiling higher than anyone else in the club? I'm thinking maybe Zach Williams, Luke Offord. Who's going to go highest, do you think, out of this current crop?
Well, I think it probably, what is he, 6'4", 6'5"? He has to have quite a high ceiling in his house, I would have thought, to be honest, and duck under the door frames. But no, he is. I'm a massive fan of Conor O'Riordan. I have been since he started. He seems a really nice lad as well, and he's a local lad and everything. And he's got it all, hasn't he? He can play the ball. He's brilliant in the air, in both boxes. And as I say now, what did Lee Bell compare him to? Torre Andre Flo. There's one for some of the slightly older listeners. He used to play up front for Chelsea in training, and those goals he scored yesterday, they were, I mean, that first one he scored, the throw in from Mickey, I think he actually won the initial flick on, didn't he, O'Riordan? So he's sort of assisted himself, and then he slammed it in the near post on a half volley. And then obviously we'll get on to the second goal, but yeah, at the moment, as Tom says, he's probably the one that you'd be if a goal scoring centre half, and as I say, he ticks all boxes with everything. Not many players get the better of him, do they? Was it last year, the year before, when the Alex played Wickham? Was it 2 years ago? When we were in League One, 2 years ago, and Vokes complimented him, didn't he? After the game, said, you know, he was one of the best young centre halves he'd ever played against. So, you know, he's destined for higher things. There's no two ways about that. It's just when, isn't it?
Okay, I have a feeling we're going to come back to Conor O'Riordan as the game chat reaches its conclusion. Tom, second half, you know, we go in at half time, 2-1, possibly deserve it, possibly a little bit fortunate to go ahead. But second half, I thought that first 20 minutes we were awful and it was just all Doncaster. We couldn't even get out of our half.
Well, just prior to half time, we were so on top, and it's a shame half time came when it did, really, because we'd really built up a head of steam at that point. And you know, Mickey, who has pictures of Rory Delap on his bedroom wall, was filling it in the long throws, and you know, we were making chances galore. So it was a bit of a shame when half time came, and you sort of thought that we would come up and come out again and pick up where we left off, but we didn't. And Donny were out early, evidently McCann had given them a bit of a kick up the backside at half time, and we just came out really sluggish. That, I mean, I couldn't see any particular tactical change on either side, but all of a sudden the intensity had gone, and the passes that we were pushing through midfield were getting blocked, and Connor Thomas's passes were sort of particularly sloppy in the early part of the second half. So it didn't come as a massive surprise when Donny equalised, unfortunately.
It's that, I mean, like the Doncaster fan said, that Ironside was a bit, he mentioned, didn't he? He was a bit of a throwback, a good old-fashioned centre forward. And the goal was a good old-fashioned centre forward's goal, wasn't it? It was a nice cross in, and he just timed his leap. And I know Connor was meant to be marking, but I don't think he could do anything about it. It was a really good header, actually. And you know, you're not saving them, are you? And as Tom said, that it was fully deserved. Doncaster were well on top at the time. It was, and he mentioned Connor Thomas. I mean, we've got to get onto the midfield. It was him and White were very poor yesterday, weren't they, in midfield? Passing, they just kept giving the ball away and they were barely in the game at all. I don't know whether Doncaster, it was their formation or what, but when they did have the ball, they just kept giving it away. Lee Bell admitted after the game we were under par, and I think we were. I didn't think Cooney and Rio added a lot down the flanks neither, to be honest. I felt a bit sorry for the forward line because they were kind of starved of any sort of service, weren't they?
I think just picking up on one of those points you just made about White and Connor Thomas having a poor game. I'm not the world's best analyst. I can't always tell you what's going on a football pitch, but I think what I saw yesterday was Doncaster doing something we've talked about Crewe doing really well, and sort of knowing what passes we wanted to make and forcing us to make the other passes, the ones we don't like to make. Because I agree, our passing yesterday was, for a Crewe team, it was poor. We normally expect to be able to pass ourselves around, get ourselves out of these intricate situations that other League Two clubs probably don't expect to do that. But the amount of times we passed it out for a throw-in or passed it to the opposition or just had to force a pass that wasn't there, I do think Doncaster deserve a bit of credit. And I think the chat that you guys had at the start with, they started off slowly, but I don't think they're going to be anywhere near 18th, 19th at the end of the season.
No, I don't think so. They were one of the more impressive. I mean, I didn't get to the Stockport game, so I'd probably say they are the most impressive team I've seen at Cresty this year.
I mean, one thing I may mention, Stu, is the fact that they've had virtually a week off as well. I know we needed to rest a few sort of players, but does that always sometimes it has consequences, doesn't it? Because I think they finished the Derby game on Tuesday, and I don't think he said he came back into training last Monday. Looking at it yesterday, there wasn't a lot of sharpness there, was there, at times? So maybe the long layoff didn't do them too many favours. Maybe helped the injured players, but the rest of the team, maybe that's possibly one of the reasons they weren't quite at it. I don't know.
I think they had a few days away as well. I mean, I definitely saw Billington and Charlie Finney were over in Tenerife, Lanzarote, one of the Spanish islands on a little, mini break. So I do agree. It's difficult though, isn't it? You can't really have the conversation of, oh, the break didn't do them very good, but then this week or this time next week we'll be complaining about having to play Sutton and then Bristol Rovers in two games in a week and travelling down to London and then getting back up for the Saturday game. So I think it's one of them that you, as football fans, football managers and football players, we all complain about being hard done by, whichever situation it is. We're not playing enough or we're playing too much. I think we all like to complain, don't we?
But yeah, and Joe White probably had a few days back in Newcastle as well, didn't he? So, but no, those two were. And I agree with you, probably Doncaster did do a job on them. But we'll hopefully pick it up for Tuesday night again.
Yeah, so we did switch it around. We brought Elliot Nevitt on instead of Aaron Rowe. And Lee Bell did say that he brought him on expecting to play with Shiloh Tracy in the number 10 and then the two up top together, but it just didn't work. Made that switch out for Nevitt on the left, Tracy back on the right. And Tom, I do think we came back into the game again and we sort of started to get on top. The goal, whilst I wouldn't say it was constant pressure, it definitely didn't come out of nowhere in the end, did it?
Well, the other thing he did is he pushed Offord into midfield. So we went four at the back and we had that extra man in midfield, which I think gave us a bit more of a platform to play out from as well. But yeah, I mean, the goal again was it was another good example of a centre-back gambling and it paying off. It was Conor O'Riordan who actually started the move with a pass out to Rio, but he continued his run. Rio ran down the touchline, characteristic, fantastic cross from Rio from the byline, and it was met at the near post by Conor, who had continued his run and flicked it past the keeper.
Neil, one of the things that I really, really liked when I saw the Derby home game a few weeks ago was Rio's cross for the first goal. You've got to say yesterday's or Saturday's was just as good.
Yeah, I think it probably doesn't do it as good a justice because the one against Derby, we had a better camera angle of it, so people can't necessarily see it as well. No, obviously, if you're in the big stand, you probably could, but I think for the sort of highlights reel, it probably doesn't show as well as the one against Derby, but yeah, his crossing at times is sensational, to be fair to him.
And Richard, what was really good as well was the fact that they didn't rush. You know, it was the 92nd minute, and instead of getting the ball out to Luke Offord and him just having a go at getting a cross in, he thought, well, there's better players at doing this sort of thing than me. I think one of the things that sort of emphasizes how patient it was, I saw one of the fan videos, there was about 15, 16 passes before that cross came in. So what they did, they maneuvered the players and they maneuvered the ball really well, I thought. Got the Doncaster players out of position. Then all of a sudden, Rio, the guy who is good at crossing the ball from the left, was on the left and able to get a good ball in. It was good patience and maturity, I felt.
Yeah, and the thing is, obviously, at that time in the game, Doncaster are going to be putting men behind the ball, aren't they, to be honest, the last couple of minutes. They're not going to be looking to lob men forward. And it's very difficult. As Tom said, Conor O'Riordan started that move, and there's the overload, isn't it, really? You've got one of your centre-halves running the entire length of the pitch and ended up putting it in the six-yard box. It's very difficult to mark, isn't it? And I think if you look again, CBR took the defender that was just in by him out the game, didn't he, I think? So it was, yeah, fantastic cross. And it really was a really good finish because he anticipated where Rio was going to put that ball and he barely broke stride to just slot it in. It really was, you know, any forward would have been proud of that goal. It really was a fantastic finish. And how many late goals have we scored in that corner in recent years? Do you know what I mean? Going back to the one Charlie Kurt scored against Older once a few years ago. Everybody's about to go home, aren't they? They go in that corner and they're just mobbed by people. It's, yeah.
That was my next question. You know, I mean, a pessimist would say we did it late against Notts County in our last league game. We did it late on Saturday against Doncaster. We can't just keep relying on these 92nd, 93rd minute goals, but they're fantastic, you know. And if there's anyone that hasn't listened to the Dan Ajayi podcast that came out on Thursday, he mentioned the Salford game and the fact that he still believed that that was going to happen. And, you know, there was one thought in his head he was going to run around, take his shirt off, and when he scored, and he did. I don't know. Tom, is it sustainable, the winning 90th minute goals? Do you care? What's the thought process?
I've noticed a lot fewer people are leaving early these days. That's for sure. Is it sustainable? I mean, you could argue that Donny had quite a high press game, and was it a coincidence that our goals came towards the end of each half when we were starting to find a bit more space to play? So yes, it's a mark of a good side, isn't it? You maintain your composure and your fitness levels, play to the whistle and give it you everything in the last 5 minutes and leave nothing out there.
Yeah, I don't think it's a coincidence that you can get that. It's a sign of a good team. It's a sign of good fitness levels. It's a sign of belief. And it was all years ago, Wickham, Stevenage, those sides, they won so many games when they got promoted late on. Wickham used to do it all the while. I mean, how many times did we lose to Wickham late on? So it can't be, you know, it's not luck or anything like that. If it's happening on a regular basis like it is for the Alex, it's clearly a belief and a confidence that you can do it no matter how long there is to go.
So, yeah, I mean, absolutely wonderful. You know, results sort of going our way. We're 1 point off second place with a game in hand. I don't really want to end on a bit of a moan, but I am going to finish on a bit of a moan for this Doncaster game. Neil, the crowd was quite disappointing yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I could talk all day about this. I get it. I get why. I mean, the ticket prices are astronomical for level 4 football game. So I get it. I get why people just aren't going. If you're not a dedicated diehard fan, why would you pay £27? Two of you, that's like £54. It's a lot of money this time of year where it's cold, it's miserable. It's, yeah. And like I say, unless you are obsessed by crew, I don't see why you would necessarily go. And it's sort of the same with the away fans. Like, we should be the number one away game. Like, we are right by the train station, load of pubs, load of sort of whatever you want nearby, and then you can just go home. But the Doncaster fans are easily going to just be like, well, we'll go to Salford instead because it's 15 quid instead of 27 quid. Like, it's a no-brainer. Like, and I get it. I get the reasons why we've increased the prices, but it frustrates me. It really does.
Picking up on one of the points there, Neil, certainly for a home fan, it is a lot of money. But I think as an away fan, we were talking about this yesterday, me and one of my mates. And if you're going on an away day, you're going to be spending, by the time you train fare, your beer money and all that, to be paying, what's the difference between paying 24 quid to get in somewhere and 27? You know what I mean? The £3 is nominal on an away day. But I get the point for home, you know, the home fans, as you say. I think they're just trying to force people into getting season tickets, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I would say to that, though, is I made a conscious effort a few years ago not to go to Swindon away because they charged £25. And this is, like, obviously before we charged 27 and before we charged 25. Like, I made a conscious effort. Like, I thought, I'm not going to go to Swindon again because I don't want to be paying £25 for a game of football, really, like, at this level. And I think people are doing that. You sort of look at it, and again, it's not the difference in, like, the 2 or 3 quid. It's more of a factor statement in terms of, like, where do you draw the line on it of, like, say, well, that's just too much for me. Like, that's just, it's just not warrant good value for money.
Well, you need at some point somebody in the league to do it, don't you? There was that big campaign in the Premier League the other year, wasn't there? 20's plenty. But obviously, you know, draw a line and that's the max you can charge. But obviously, that's probably up to the EFL to do, isn't it?
And if you are going to charge a premium figure for the league matches, why not discount the cup matches? So as people can come and see football on the budget. You know, in effect, this Bristol Rovers game is a bit of a free hit. You know, I don't know whether we'd budgeted to get to round two of the FA Cup, but you know, there's a really good opportunity there to charge people a tenner and fill the ground, and maybe people will like what they see and then might want to come and spend 27 quid for a league match once in a while.
Neil, I think you made the point before we started recording, though, even with the membership, is it 8 games you have to go to before you start making your money back? And, you know, you don't really live anywhere near Cheshire these days. You're down south, and getting to 8 home games is probably not something achievable. You know, our parents don't live in the area. Yeah. You don't live in the area. There's no real reason to be travelling back except for the Alex, but it's just putting people off, I think.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like, if I'm going to be brutally honest, like, there's obviously, like you say, I live miles away, and people are going to like me for this or hate me for this, but I'm sort of boycotting going to Alex at home this season because I just, there's a line for me, and the £27 has crossed it. And I say, I can't get a season ticket because I'm too far away to warrant going every single home game. I can't, like, the membership, like you say, is £30 to buy a card that gets me £4 discount per game. Like, it is. It's like 7.5 games like that cost me. Like, sort of. So I'm looking at, if I go to 10 games a season, I've saved like £8, something stupid like that. That's it. But what happens if I don't make the 10 games? It just doesn't seem right. So, yeah, I don't know. The ticket price has really frustrated me. But I get why they've gone up. But I think someone has to look at something somewhere and just think, we're just not attracting people.
I think, you know, there's two sides, isn't there? There's the club has to run for a profit. You know, they have to make money. But the other side is, there's only so many fans that support Crewe. You know, the fan base that they're dipping into is only so big. We're not Disney Plus or Apple, who have got millions and millions of people that will buy the latest product regardless. There is a few thousand of us around the world, and that's it. You know, if you look at, I know this doesn't involve everybody, but if you look at the club's Twitter account, I think they're on 76,000, and that's it. So there's not millions of us. So it's a difficult situation that what do they charge with the money they've got to make the most amount of money? But if money's the only thing, then we're not putting the fan experience first. And Neil, you're probably not the only person. In fact, I know you're not the only person who's not going because they can't afford it or they can't justify the cost. But I think the other thing that's a real shame, Richard, to get it back to the team, is this team deserves to be playing in front of a bigger crowd, supporting them, getting behind them and, you know, celebrating what they're achieving on the pitch.
Exactly, exactly. At the moment, this is, I mean, obviously we had years of misery, but at the moment it's fabulous, isn't it? I mean, you know, even like yesterday didn't play well, but we keep grinding it out. And it, as you mentioned earlier, there's nothing better than a last minute winner, is there? So if anybody went there, just didn't come away from there excited. But we've only got probably, you look at the gates, I mean, Doncaster didn't bring many yesterday, but there was only about, what was the gate, 4,000 something they brought, 4,600. So you're always looking about 3,800, 4,000 at the max crew fans. And it never gets really above that, does it? It drops slightly. But so it's like you mentioned earlier, we have got that, just that core support. And that's basically that. If you're not going to, as good as we are, I mean, as I say, this football is brilliant to watch. So if you're not going to go and watch them now, you know, unless you probably never will you?
No. And I am aware that we did win yesterday and we've spent the last 10 minutes having a little whinge and a moan. So it is just key just to finish, I think, to remind ourselves that we did win yesterday in the 92nd minute. We are up to fourth again. We are 1 point off second place with a game in hand and a superior goal difference. So things are rosy, but, you know, we wouldn't be football fans if we didn't find something to complain about, even in the happiest of times. OK, I think that will do us for the Doncaster game then. Next, we will turn our attention to the two games coming up this week. Okay, Richard, I'll start with you. If I said Doncaster had a look of a potential banana skin or one that looks trickier than it might do on paper, Sutton United, 24th in the table, away, Tuesday night. I'm a bit nervous going into this one just because I think the weight of expectation that's on these games now.
Yeah, I mean, a few weeks ago, they, you know, they looked like they were kind of cannon fodder, didn't they? But I've had a look this morning. They're unbeaten in four. Yeah, they've drawn three of them and won one like that. So they're not, I think, 1-1 yesterday, 1-1 the week before. So they're not sort of shipping a load of goals in. I still think it's like the land of the giants that they play, isn't it? That style of football, fairly direct and something you'd associate with League Four many years ago. And maybe teams have found that out. I know one or two of the players left at the end of last year, didn't they, went to other clubs. But as you say, yeah, it is potential banana skin, isn't it? And after, as I say, yesterday we weren't great. So hopefully we can bounce back and out-football them. And we are better off set pieces now as well, aren't we, with Connor and Mickey at the back. Do you know what I mean? We don't seem to ship as many. We just need Harvey to come and collect them.
Yeah, Tom, Richard's just alluded to Sutton style. There has been a lot of player turnover, but I can't imagine that's changed the style because Matt Gray is still there. He's been there for a few years now. And we saw last year, they want to come. They want to like get in your face. They want to disrupt the game. They want to play as little football as possible and just get it up to the big man and see what he can do. It's going to be a tricky game Tuesday night, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, they have improved of late, but only in as much as drawing with teams that are in and around them, although they did beat Bradford. So, yeah, I mean, they're the sort of side that we do historically struggle with, you know, quite physical in the defenders' faces. I mean, you could say that Doncaster had some success with a similar-ish approach yesterday in that they pushed very high onto our defenders and gave us some dicey moments at time. I mean, we've only played them twice, I think, so we've had a win and a draw. I think in the equivalent away game last year, I think they equalised in the 93rd minute, I think. So let's hope we don't ship another last minute goal. But they've also had quite a turnover of players. I mean, looking at their stats, their danger man is Harry Smith, who I think has joined them this season. He's got 7 goals in 15. So I've never seen him play. But, you know, on the face of it, he's a man in form.
Yeah, so, you know, we beat them at home last year, and then, Neil, that was the one of Rod McDonald's kung fu kick to the stomach, possibly costing us 3 points down there. Are you confident that this team is going to get the 3 points?
Probably the same as everyone else, really. Probably, I mean, technically, I think we should or could get the 3 points, but it's one where sort of expectations more on us to where we should be getting the 3 points, which probably makes me more skeptical as a fan, I would say. So I want to say we will. I want to say we sort of will sneak a win. But yeah, it's not one that I think, oh yeah, we'll cruise this 4-5-0, because I just can't see it.
Okay, well, whilst we're on that then, Neil, what is the score going to be?
1-0 crew.
Tom?
I'll go 2-0 crew.
And Richard?
I'll echo Neil. I'll go 1-0 crew.
Perfect. Clean sweep. Okay, to get the Sutton perspective on their season so far, I spoke to Gabriel. Hi, Gabriel. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Not a problem. Now, normally when we play Sutton, I speak to Mike from the Sutton United Talk Time pod, but he's unavailable this week. He put your name forward. Can you just give us a little bit of a backstory between you and your supporting of Sutton?
So the first chance that I had to see Sutton was while I was still in Romania. I watched their game against Leeds in the FA Cup. That was in January 2017. And I usually support the underdog, so obviously I was supporting them and I was satisfied with their win. Actually, the T-shirt that I'm having now has the name of Jamie Collins on its back. And he was the guy who scored the penalty, the winning penalty against Leeds. So coincidentally, I got to move to UK and I moved. It wasn't planned to move in this area. I was planning to move in the north of London, but we got to move in Sutton. And of course, the first step that I took was to buy a season ticket. That was in the summer of 2020, which I got to use only twice because it was the COVID year. And I got to see two games. They played three games with spectators, but I couldn't attend one of them. And luckily, one of those games was the promotion games against Hartlepool that we won 3-0 and got promoted from National League to the AFL. So that was a pretty good start here as a fan, and it got me into it a lot.
Perfect. Is there a fate to align then with watching that game and then moving to Sutton? Excellent. It's an excellent story. Gabriel, probably not such an excellent answer is if we move on to Sutton's season this year. Drew on Saturday at Grimsby, which, you know, is not a bad result, but still find yourself in 24th. What do you think's gone wrong this year?
First thing is that we had half of the team leaving in summer. We had major players. Some of them we knew that will leave, such as Ajiboye, who was just returned from a loan. But we had players with 3 years here, like Randall, like Bugil, like Alistair Smith. That was a very, very important player for the team. And many more that left in this summer season. So we had to replace them. And if in the years before we had some luck with the transfers, finding some hidden gems like the already named Alistair Smith, David Ajiboye, both are playing now in League One. Also, Isaac Olafe, though he was a loner, he played here for 3 years, and now he's one of the top scorers of League Two. Joe Kizzy. Anyway, we found players in lower leagues that we took with us in the AFL and that performed very well. But in the last 2 years, the scouting wasn't so successful. actually not this year, but the year before that, the summer scouting was pretty disastrous. We had some players that were only on the bench and didn't help at all. Luke Gambin, Charlie Kendall, Kwame Thomas from Wrexham. This year, we went for players with experience in the AFL mostly. The only wildcards are the CB Omar Sounmi, who played at Bromley, top team in the National League, and Nguessan, who came from National League South. But the others, Harry Smith, I saw him 2 years ago playing at Leyton against us, and I was very impressed with his strength. And I feel that if we had Harry Smith 2 years ago as a striker, we would have been promoted directly in that season. O'Brien, Coley, all of them are pretty good players, but they spent a lot of time fitting in here. And we don't have a nucleus anymore. We lost the captain and leader of the team, Eastmond, after only a few games. So we struggled a lot.
Okay, so the manager, and he has been manager since 2019. So, you know, he's getting on to one of the longest times in charge, is Matt Gray. Is he under any threat of being sacked, or is there still quite a lot of goodwill because of the promotion out of the National League?
There's a lot of goodwill on one side. And the second thing is that if he was to be sacked, he should have been sacked five games ago. We are on a positive run. I don't know if you noticed, but we are on a positive run. That game with Charlton aside in the AFL Trophy, because we didn't even needed that extra games anymore. But we had two wins and then three draws. And from this, the last four games, we are coming back from 0-1. So there are some positives. The team is at least fighting. They found a core team, a system. Basically, one of the reasons that we lost so many games is after the start of the season, I feel that Matt Gray panicked a little bit and changed his system. He was 4-4-2 all the way for 3 years, and then he tried 4-1-4-1. He tried even a five at the back against Wrexham. So now he's back at his old style of 4-4-2, and we're playing our game. We're not doing so good, but we're not doing that bad anymore. We have some positives, and we desperately need wins, of course, also against the Crewe. But I feel that we can turn it around, and I feel that at the moment, Matt Gray's position is in no danger.
Okay, Gabriel, if we move on to players, I'm going to just pick out a couple that you've already mentioned. Harry Smith is top goal scorer for Sutton with 10 already this season, which is quite impressive. And Josh Coley has 6 assists. Are they the two men that Crewe need to look out for, or are there more players in the Sutton side that are dangerous?
We rely a lot on Harry Smith's aerial game, but also O'Brien is a very important player in the team. Josh Cooley had progressed a lot and was very important in the last few games. And there's this story, maybe you know or not, about Omari Patrick, who started very well on the attack. He scored 5, but he's not doing his defensive bit. And he also had a bit of a clash with Matt Gray. So he's now on the bench, and he's used only as a substitute for the last 20 minutes to bring on, especially that we were down in so many games, to bring on some offensive strength. He's a very, very good player offensively, a lot of quality. But what everybody in of the hardcore Sutton supporters said was that we were scoring two and getting scored four or five with him in the team. So that's why he's on the bench now.
Okay, Gabriel, I've got one final question. I feel like you've already told me that you think they're going to stay up. So is that a yes or a no?
I cannot say that. For example, yesterday at Grimsby, we had three major chances to win it after the in the second half because we went down. They had a good chance with our former player, Donovan Wilson, to make it 2-0, which would have probably closed it. But after we scored the equalizer, we had three massive chances to win it. On the other hand, against Tranmere, we were appalling the one game ago at home. Tranmere is at least away from clearly the weakest team that we've met. And they went with a lot of luck with our own goal ahead. And that they just waited for the game to end for 85 minutes. And we didn't create anything until we scored. Of course, we scored 5 minutes before the end of the game. And after we scored, we had two more chances to win it, but we wouldn't have deserved it. And I cannot say there are good teams in the competition. We have to put two behind us, and I'm not sure which can be those two. Normally we would say Tranmere and Forest Green, but we couldn't win against Tranmere, and Forest Green also seems to be struggling, but getting some points. So it will be hard. It will be hard because we need another 30 points to escape. And
okay, what's the score going to be on Tuesday?
Well, I would go for another 1-1, but this time with Sutton scoring first because we went down too many times. So,
Gabriel, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Okay, following on from the Sutton game on Tuesday, we have our reward for beating Derby with a home game against Bristol Rovers in the second round of the FA Cup. I asked this question to Trevor before the replay of the Derby game. Are you excited, Tom?
Well, Bristol Rovers got beat by Derby yesterday. So if you're following the logic that we comprehensively dismantled Derby on their patch, then this should be a routine victory, right? Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be a competitive game. They're in decent form. They've only been beaten once in the last five, and that includes three wins, which kind of makes it all the more surprising that they sacked Joey Barton. So I can't quite figure out what's gone on there, because they seem to be doing all right on the face of it. Yeah, mid-table League One results with the caretaker manager seem to be pretty decent from what I can tell. So I don't think it's going to be easy, but it's all to play for.
Yeah, Richard, I suppose this one goes down to, you know, where do they see their priorities going? Because Tom just mentioned their mid-table. They're currently 11th. They lost yesterday, like Tom just said, to Derby. They are 7 points off the playoffs. So if you're them, are you resting a few players, making sure you focus on the league, maybe sneak in a playoff position, or is this the one you're going for?
Yeah, it's the old adage, isn't it? Do you concentrate on the league, or they've weighed it up? And plus as well, financial implications as well, isn't it? It can be massive this round, can't it? I mean, I don't know what Bristol Rovers' financial situation is like. The manager might be giving the chairman on his back saying, you need to put a full-strength team out. We're playing a League Two team. We need to win this and then hopefully draw some Man United or somebody in the next round on telly. You know what I mean? It's a big... I was told the other week the Alex managed just getting through beating Derby from a financial perspective. It was quite big. I think you got about 40 grand for going through, more money, the gate receipts and all that. I think it was or something close to £100,000. So from that perspective, it is important, isn't it? Because that's obviously all money that Lee Bell can hopefully use in January. So it does have its importance from a financial implication, but from a footballing one, It's a tough game still, isn't it? You know, Bristol Rovers, mid-table League One side, they're going to be fairly decent, aren't they? as Tom said, are they, you know, they beat, are they as good as Derby? Who just got into the playoffs yesterday, didn't they, Derby? They're in League One playoffs now. We beat them quite comfortably.
Yeah, I guess, you know, the way football works, we beat Derby, Derby beat Bristol Rovers, so we can almost absolutely nail on Bristol Rovers will beat us because, you know, that's how football works. Neil, it will be a tough game, won't it? Are you excited for the possibility of drawing Man United or maybe even a big club in the third round if we get through?
Yes, very much so. Yeah, looking forward to sort of, we were looking forward to going to the game. And then, yeah, sort of, essentially, it's a free hit, isn't it? If we lose, then we just sort of say, okay, well, we lost to a team in the higher division and fair play to them. But if we win, then we'll all be on tenterhooks when the guys are pulling the balls out of a hat to see who we could potentially get.
They've got Anthony Evans playing for them, who I remember we had on loan from Everton. And if memory serves, he did absolutely nothing for us. But turns out he's one of their best players. So that'll be interesting to see what sort of transformation he's effected.
Okay, Richard, I'm going to come to you then. You know, obviously, we're all aware there's a bit of an injury crisis at the club at the moment. We've got, I'd say, four definite starters for the first team out with Williams and Powell and Tabana, Chris Long. Do you think that this is an opportunity to get some of those youngsters we started off the chat with today from the youth team or those on the edge, Zach Kempster down, Lewis Billington, into the team? Or would you be expecting to see Lee Bell put the same team out that he did on Saturday, on Tuesday, and then Saturday again?
Yeah, it's a good question, isn't it? And we don't know the answer, do we really, until it happens. I mean, CBR was hobbling off yesterday, wasn't he? So you think, will he play against Sutton? If not, you've got Nevitt back from injury. And the thing with regarding the injuries is it's all gone quiet, hasn't it? Chris Long, Tabina, where are they up to? He said the other week they'd be back within a couple of weeks and they haven't been. And every time you see a Lee Bell press conference, he says, we'll have none of the players back. So it's difficult, isn't it, really? I mean, we're lucky the fact that CBR's soldiered on, hasn't he? And then say when Nevitt was injured and now Nevitt might be back in for him, that we have got them players. But I don't know. It is tempting, isn't it, to put some of the younger lads in, maybe the odd one or two, just see how they go. But again, going back to what we said previously, it's how much they want to win the game, isn't it?
Okay, Richard, I'll stick with you then. What's the score going to be Saturday in the Cup?
I think we'll come unstuck, unfortunately. 2-1 Bristol Rovers.
Tom?
I think another replay beckons 1-1.
Okay, and then Neil to save the score prediction.
Annoyingly, I'm going to go side with Tom. I think we'll probably do what we don't want and get a replay at 1-1.
Okay, to get the Bristol Rovers perspective on the season so far, I spoke to Charlie. Hi, Charlie. Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Not a problem. So it's your first time with us. So just to really start us off, what's your connection to Bristol Rovers? What is it that you do with the club?
Yeah, basically, yeah. I've had a YouTube channel for about 5 years now. Started off with One Ravers Vlogs. And then, yeah, in the past sort of 2-3 months, I've sort of changed it into sort of, yeah, more of a podcast setting. So yeah, we're on YouTube now, but hopefully going into all podcast platforms soon.
Okay, now we are recording this on Sunday, November the 26th. On October the 26th, Bristol Rovers sacked Joey Barton as manager. So it's now been a full calendar month. It doesn't seem, from my perspective looking in, that there's been any change in the manager position. You've still got the caretaker in charge. What's going on? What's happening? Are you expecting a manager to be appointed soon?
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, I would have said that, and many Rovers fans would have said that. Hopefully, you know, we would have had one not long after Joey was sacked. But like you said, it's been a whole month now. And yeah, I'm not really sure what's going on. We've interviewed loads of managers, you know, from Steve Cotchell to Neil Lennon to Robinson. The list goes on. So I'm not really sure what's going on. Even for us, it's a bit of a mystery. So we're still waiting. So I personally think it will end up being Mangan, but then I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, if someone else gets it. But yeah, for us fans, we just want to know. And at the moment, it's still Mangan. So yeah, it's all a bit crazy at the moment.
All right, let's move on to the game coming up on Saturday. My first question would be, how seriously are Bristol Rovers going to take this game? Looking at you from, again, an outsider's perspective, it looks like it's a prime example of a mid-table side going to a team in the league below with a good chance to get into round three and get a big name. Is that your perspective, or are you still sort of focusing on the league, saying we've got a chance of making playoffs? What do you reckon the thinking behind it's going to be?
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I've always loved the FA Cup, and you know, we've for most of my you know life going to watch Rovers, we've never done really well in the FA Cup or many cup competitions. So for me, I want to take it as serious, you know, as anyone really. And like you said, it's a good chance for both teams to get into the third round and get a big name. So that's what I'm hoping. I think even if we do make changes, I think our squad's really strong. And yeah, hopefully we can go through, but it's going to be difficult because Crewe are, you know, a brilliant side, doing really well, playing good football, you know, attacking, you know, obviously you beat Derby as well, you know, last week or a week and a half ago before the international break. So it's not going to be an easy game.
Okay. And then, you know, obviously with Crewe being in League Two, my knowledge of League One isn't tremendous at the moment, but I had a little look at the stats and it looks like Aaron Collins is the man to look out for. 4 goals, 5 assists this season. Is that fair? Is there other players to look out for, or is he the main man?
Yeah, I think he's still someone to look out for. To be honest with you, he hasn't been on the best form as of late. He's still been getting a few assists, but he's gone 2 months now without a goal in the league. He scored in our last FA Cup game where we won 7-2. But yeah, he sort of struggled a bit with form. I would say, for me personally, I'd probably say Chris Martin is one to look out for. He scored again yesterday against his old club, Derby. He's got 4 goals in the league since coming in, you know, a couple of months back. And also Anthony Evans, who I think is an ex-Crewe player a few years back. I think him and Jack Hunt have been on good form as well. But I think there's quite a few. You know, you look at Luke Thomas as well and Vale, there's quite a lot of players to watch out for. But the main player, I would probably say Chris Martin, because he's been our man for the goals in recent weeks.
Just before I get a prediction from you then, Charlie, can I just ask you about Anthony Evans? Because we had him on loan, I think, the year before you signed him on a permanent deal from Paderborn. We had him on loan. And if I'm completely honest, you know, it wasn't something I said on the podcast at the time because I try and be supportive and positive, but he was awful. And then the year that you guys got promoted out of League Two, he seemed to be scoring a goal every week. He seemed to be doing really well and he was instrumental in your promotion. So, you know, how good is he? Because I didn't rate him.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, yeah, that season, I think we got him on a free transfer. Like you said, he struggled at a few loans, including, you know, yourselves. And he was brilliant that season in, you know, playing just behind the striker. I think he got around 22, 23 goal contributions that season. So he was outstanding. And then last year, I'm not sure why, but Barton played him more deeper, as in like an actual centre midfielder, and he didn't suit it at all. He did struggle last season, but this season he's been put back to, you know, playing in the 10, really. And I think he's been a lot better. He's got a few assists and a few goals this season, and he's definitely looking back to what we've seen in the League Two season. He's been really good, one of our better players this season.
All right, Charlie, last question, and then I'll let you get on with your day. What's the score going to be on Saturday?
It's a tough one, because like I said, it is going to be a tough game. I really do rate Crewe and what, you know, your manager and, you know, everyone else behind the scenes have done. You know, it's sort of, all set out to be a very interesting game. But if I was going to give you a score prediction, I've got to say a win. But I think it's going to be a lot of goals. I'll say 3-2 Rovers. I think we'll just edge it. But I wouldn't be surprised if there was a replay either.
Okay, Charlie, thank you so much for your time. Okay, lastly then, just before we finish today, I just want to say we had quite a big week with the podcast last week. We had a pod with Graham McGarry that came out on Monday last week, and that was received as well as it always is when we get him on. We also had a player pod for what felt for the first time in a long time with Dan Ajay. And, you know, it seems to have done him well because he came on the pitch for Leighton Orient for the first time yesterday on Saturday as a sub. But those two podcasts also sort of helped us pass 100,000 downloads, which, I mean, if you'll have seen anything I've put on Facebook or Twitter or anything like that, it blows me away that the podcast that we've started to talk about Cryolics has now been downloaded that many times. So I'll say it again. Thank you so much for anyone that's just contributed or listens or, you know, helps out in any way. Dave, producer Dave, I'm going to bring you in here. We had an article out that I wrote a few words for. You wrote a few words for. There were some lovely comments in it, but I think what we both felt as well was there were some lovely words from other people who weren't in it to say what the podcast means to them and, you know, how thankful they are. So it sort of makes it all worthwhile, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. And, you know, when you're sat here at your computer, you don't necessarily realize what people think about it, or, you know, sometimes you might worry what they think about it. But to get those words of encouragement from people to say thank you, it means everything really to us. So, yeah, thank you for listening. And I'll repeat what I said in that article. If you like it, please keep downloading and tell your friends so we can get even more downloads.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that will probably do us for this week. If you haven't listened to the Dan Ajay podcast, you missed it because you weren't aware there was one on Thursday, please do have a little listen. It's very good with last season's top scorer. But for now, Neil, Richard and Tom, thank you.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank you as ever for listening. We will be back next week. Until then, goodbye. Dang, 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 ding, dong, ding, blue moon.